you have to obey my orders at all times. I will have to borrow your head for a short time, and then I will attain total power.
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you were warned about. I'm Trent here with Kevin, Kat, and Dave. Hello.
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 Hi.
Follow us on Instagram at Speak All Evil Pod. I'm a little discombobulated right now because it's Dave's World Cinema Week. And we're starting with a movie that I didn't think we would start with, Mystics in Bali. I don't know. I just assumed we would start with Next of Kin. Maybe that's just because I watched that one first, and then I went down the Australian New Wave Ausploitation Cinema rabbit hole.
Ooh, ausploitation.
For days, and I saw some awesome stuff. Have you guys ever seen Picnic at Hanging Rock?
Yes.
That is very good. Wow. I love that movie. That's from 1975. It's on Max right now. I've heard about it for years. It's on Criterion, too. That was kind of one of the big Australian New Wave movies that was part of this movement, and it stars an even younger John Jarrett than we are going to see in Next of Kin. It's directed by Peter Weir, who directed Dead Poets Society, The Truman Show, a bunch of other. Yeah, it's so good. You have to see Picnic at Hanging Rock.
Great soundtrack, too.
It's awesome. I need to watch it again. And then I also watched, have you ever heard of Wake in Fright?
Mm-mm.
From 1971, early Ausploitation style, was directed by the same guy that directed First Blood, and also Weekend at Bernie's.
You're really selling this one.
Yeah, but it's oh, come on, First Blood?
That guy's really good at a pitch. You know, he goes in, you know, like, we have a veteran in the woods fighting the cops. We got a dead guy at a party.
Wake in Fright is kind of, it's like an Australian outback Deliverance kind of thing about this guy, this well-manicured, educated guy who wants to be a professor, and he ends up stuck in the rural outback teaching elementary school. And then he's trying to get to Sydney anyway. He gets stuck in this even more podunk town than the one he left. And it's really good. It's not quite horror. It's like the horror of man type thing.
Well, I feel like that you have gone down the Indonesian rabbit hole already.
I have
a little
seen,
bit.
Yeah, I've seen a number of Indonesian. But that was the thing. I didn't really have time. I got so wrapped up in the Ausploitation stuff. And we've talked about so many Australian horror movies, but I've never really, and I grew up on Mad Max, like the ultimate Ausploitation movie. But I've never really like thought of Australian cinema like all together as a thing, you know. I never really put it in a broader context, which I've now been starting to do a little bit, so thanks for that.
Yeah, I think that both of these scenes are unsung, untapped resources as far as like pretty consistently there's a lot of really, really good stuff. And I think we talked about how they didn't make horror movies in Australia until a certain year. I think you told us that.
Yeah, it was the 70s.
Right.
It was pretty much when it started.
Australia?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, same for Indonesia, too. I mean, even more recent where, like, some really gnarly shit's been coming out of there, yeah.
Yeah, we haven't talked about enough Indonesian horror movies. And by the time I came out of the kangaroo hole, I didn't have time to now.
Kangaroo pouch.
I kind of wish it was one or the other.
The pouch. Kangaroo pouch.
I can't do a crash course on both Ausploitation and...
I would say Impetigore is a standout
one
that you guys recommended to me.
Yeah, Impetigore is awesome. Satan Slaves, Queen of the... Was it Queen of the...
Queen of Black Magic?
Queen of Black Magic is a good one.
The Damned, you almost said.
I was like...
What's that?
I thought you were going to say Queen of the Damned.
I was like, yeah.
Anybody else got any recommendations or anything this week outside the box here before we get going?
I feel like Dave unknowingly passed me the Sopranos baton because me and Nick have now started the Sopranos for the first time.
For the first time?
First time, baby. I feel like I'm really living.
That's crazy.
We made chicken parm last night. He's like, we're going to make a chicken parm. We're going to watch the finale.
Oh my God.
Of the first season.
Putting the food together. That's really good.
Yeah, we really went all out. I had a glass of red wine.
You should get some Cokes some coke and some strippers. And like,
that's season two finale.
Parmesan.
Yeah,
I'm excited for you. So how far are you?
We finished. I was keeping him awake because he got so sleepy and we don't have time until like next week to like watch a show together.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'm not going to wait to finish the season finale. And so I was like poking him awake to finish the first season.
So you finished the first season?
Yes. In like less than a week. So I'm very proud of us. I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm all in, baby.
Nice.
I did get my 23andMe genealogy done one time. 0% Italian. But I feel like I could be Italian now.
Well, yeah. And you say Sopranos.
Yeah.
Which I think is the...
I just heard someone say Sopranos
recently.
I think I alternate between saying Sopranos and Sopranos.
Yeah.
Well, I'm an
Wait,
alto.
Sopranos?
I have no idea. I have always said Sopranos.
Sorry.
Did you guys hear my joke?
No, sorry. Do it again.
Sorry, I said I'm an alto. Because like an alto soprano. Tenor. Bass. It's singing.
This week.
Yeah.
It's Dave's World Cinema Week. We're going to start with the 1981 Indonesian film called Mystics in Bali.
Researching a book that takes her to Bali and the black magic cult of the Liak, Kathy meets a witch who promises to train her in the dark arts. Tricked, Kathy is instead turned into a Penanglian, a flying vampire with internal organs hanging from her neck.
Next week.
Well, I get a feeling that there's some shade coming my way towards Mystics in Bali. Oh, really?
Mm-mm.
This is a very... It's one of the bizarre movies that I pick that has like... It has some merit, but there's all whatever the opposite of merit is, there's lots more of that. This reminds me a lot of House, obviously, the 77 Japanese horror movie.
Yeah.
With the glowing animation. But this has some really cool practical effects. And if you can make it through the cackling, you'll get to enjoy the decapitated head. And it's not just a head. I don't know what... And the organs, too. But I don't know what the purpose of that is, but I like it.
Yeah.
And there's like some folk horror stuff that's just executed very... fundamentally, like the storytelling is like, and the dialogue is just so plain and stupid. But everyone looks great.
The mustache alone, really.
Everyone looks great. It has such a vibe. And some of the imagery in this does actually scare me, which was kind of surprising. But I think it's because it's, done on the cheap in the early 80s, and you accidentally sometimes get things like that that you can be laughing at it, but it's also like, this is kind of terrifying. I hope you guys liked Mystics in Bali. I've been talking about having this one on the show for a long time.
Yeah. I loved it. It's great. I mean, this is much different than what I'm used to. The only Indonesian movies that I know are the more recent ones, like we've mentioned. So it was really fun. And I've certainly heard this movie referenced, seen it referenced in passing. So it was fun to go back and see something much older. And yeah, big time House vibes in this. It's only on YouTube. This is not available on any of the streaming platforms. But if you search YouTube, Mystics in Bali, there's a version that comes right up that says English dub quality version. That's the one I watched, and I thought it was very good quality.
The dub makes it.
Well, I was going to say, I felt the widescreen, it's in a nice widescreen format. The English dub is absolutely atrocious beyond, I mean, it's so bad it's good,
Right,
It's incredibly badly dubbed, but it looks great. And this is wacky. I mean, this is exactly what I would expect from Dave's early 80s Indonesian Horror Week. It is very wacky. The fingernails, the cackling. I loved actually the title card sequence is awesome. This one with all the like the paper mache monsters or whatever, the monster costumes, stuff like that. Kind of sets you up a little bit and then goes a little bit downhill, I think, from the title card. But very fun, very funny, easy. You don't really have to pay too much attention. The story is pretty basic, and even being as basic as it is, it still manages to be confusing also at points. You don't always necessarily know who everyone is and what they're talking about, but I was initially the big surprise for me with this movie, the second time we've seen a severed head go down on a pregnant woman. I guess she wasn't pregnant in Reanimator, but it turns out the severed head was eating the baby from the womb. I didn't get that. I didn't know.
Really, I didn't get that.
No, I thought the severed head was just
deflating.
Oh my God, the stomach deflates?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that. I just thought it was sex.
Too busy being aroused to notice.
Eye contact that she makes during that scene. Yeah.
It's so creepy. I only knew it was eating the baby because I looked it up later.
Yes.
Wow. And we just saw here my other favorite scene where the long, impossibly long-fingered, cackling master of black magic goes to shake Kathy's hand, the main character, and her hand comes off and Kathy's hand drops to the ground and crawls away. Yeah, very Evil Dead. A lot of like Evil Dead 2 kind of vibes in this. This is a lot of fun, though. I mean, you can't go wrong. It's worth a look and a little bit of education about some of these early movies that I guess were produced mostly because the government thought they could make some money. The government of Indonesia thought they could make some money just targeting Western audiences. And I believe this is credited as the first film from Indonesia that was specifically made and targeted and sold to Western markets. So that's interesting.
That's all. I've been working on it.
Next week.
I knew it was coming.
I auditioned for the Wicked Witch of the West in high school. I didn't get it, but I feel like this is my comeback. Thank you. I got to be honest with you guys. I wasn't really sure what was going on during this movie. Apparently, it was a basic plot. I think I caught some of it. I think I was just kind of distracted. I understood the gist, and maybe that's really all that there was, Trent, like the gist of it. There's this witchy woman who cackles a lot and needs a manicure. I feel like this is like the closest I've ever been to being on film.
Yes,
it was great. I loved it. She's got a different face. She's going to teach this girl about stuff so she can write her book. And then is like, just kidding. Why she says just kidding, I don't really know. She's an evil witchy woman. All I know is that the moment that that head separated from that woman's body, I thought that this was a good movie.
Wow.
That's all it takes now. I'm like, oh, I don't really understand the plot. Oh, is that the same person? I don't really know. Oh, now this head's floating around, just being all wiggly.
Plot be damned.
Into it.
With the guts hanging behind it.
Exactly. Just like floating like a kite. Like a body kite. Just floating around.
Now, is that the word that we were joking about? Is that the word that you said in your synopsis? There's a name for it. There's a name for a severed head that floats around with its intestines, its entrails.
It's both the Liak and the Peninggalan.
Okay, so really to put this in your mind, it's a severed head and it's floating, but it's carrying its lungs and its guts. Its intestines are all trailing underneath.
Yeah. Just dropping blood on things, probably. Little cats are probably trying to play with it. As it's floating around, I wouldn't say that this was something that I was expecting, this head floating around, but I think it really carried the movie, to be honest. There was some kind of a love triangle going on. Is that what I picked up? Like some woman was like, Kathy's man used to be my man, and now I'm an evil witch?
His ex shows up at the end. It doesn't
For
really
what
seem
reason?
Connect. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's not really connected to the story.
Okay. Well, aesthetically pleasing to watch. I thought it was fun, just like House, just like bright colors, weird body, or just this weird tongue tattooing people's thighs.
Electric tongue tattoo.
It was just bonkers. It was absolutely bonkers, but I liked it. Would I suggest it due to its plot points? No. Would I suggest it to someone because this is a good party movie. This is one you throw on because you don't need to know what's going on. You just need to see weird shit going on screen. And then baby gets sucked out of a womb. Boom. All you need. It was a weird one, but it was fun. And sometimes it's all we need on this podcast.
I didn't get the book part.
The what?
I missed the whole, she was writing a book.
That was like in the beginning. She's like, I'm writing a book.
She's an anthropologist and she's studying black magic around the world. She mentions that she's already figured out voodoo in Africa, quote unquote.
Oh, yeah. She looks like. She looks
already, she already knows
her name
voodoo
is
from
Kathy.
Africa, she says.
Yeah,
she looks it. He looks the part.
Yeah.
I thought you liked this, Trent, because it's very leggy. Especially that last scene there with the electric tongue tattoo.
Yeah. And then when she has to show Kendra or Hendra the tattoo, she has to take it all off.
She's not supposed to.
No.
I mean, this was a fucking blast. I watched this. I was in a great mood, and I was cackling, too. I often get chastised with the volume that I watch my movies at, and usually I get mad, and I'm like, oh, get the fuck out of my room, watching my movie loud. This time, after like 11 consecutive minutes of cackling, I was like, yeah, you guys are right. I should turn this shit down. But I was like cheering, like this is impossibly amazing. Constantly thinking like how did this get made? Then you remember it's like 81. I got the house vibes. I got the Evil Dead vibes. What's the bloody muscle bodybuilder? Like
that's
I got
it.
Those
yeah.
vibes.
Yeah,
I was like
definitely
100%. This is in that category. I firmly believe that Kathy and Mahendra are two main characters. That they filmed all of their scenes in one afternoon and just changed clothes. I think that was all done very quickly.
Yes.
They said cut just so they could change their clothes. Like you, Trent, I never know what we're going to get when Dave busts out the YouTube only or the fwmovies.com. But the title card, I was really intrigued. Like, wow, okay, what are we getting here? And then it immediately goes to fucking General Hospital. And I was like, what is happening with like the quality? Also, fresh off of Children of the Corn, where Dave is making fun of like lasers. I'm like, what the fuck, dude?
Don't worry, we're going to talk about
Fruit Roll-Up comes out of the bushes and starts breaking people's legs with like the fucking lasers. Like, this is bullshit.
He's
mad because somebody picked this shit and he knew he had Mystics in Bali loaded up.
Yeah.
Everything was amazing. The fingernails, she's like, literally there's a scene where the cackling woman is doing the fingernail handshake walk, and it takes like a whole minute because she doesn't want her fingernails to fall off. Like the actress playing the character, the tongue tattoo, I'm so pumped. I'm like, what is this tongue tattoo going to look like when it's done? It looks like some third grader drew a fucking, you know, cartoon character on the leg. Nothing about this movie is good. Everything about it is fucking awesome. And I was getting like deeper vibes. I watched it and I got excited to research it and be like, okay, they're saying something here. And that's before I read that, you know, all right, this was like an early 80s grab. They were releasing some of the restrictions on films and they were like, we could probably get on this Friday the 13th and like some of this stuff.
Horror movies are big overseas.
But this is like 100%. Worth a watch if you're, especially if you're all the movies that we've referenced, if you're into, you should definitely check this one out.
I feel like it goes further than movies did at this time, even in America. And that's the thing that kind of like stands out to me is that it's so like dirty. It's kind of like kinky and dirty and weird.
Super horny.
And, you know, there's the, you know, lesbian aspect, I guess, if you want to call it that.
I mean, I don't think we want to classify lesbians as baby sucking.
Wait, they don't eat babies.
So you're saying you saw like a kind of a queer subtext between Kathy and the queen of black magic?
No. Well, maybe they, you know, she was like, it had more of like a sensei kind of relationship.
But then but I could see that too. They're doing the pig dance and the snake dance.
Oh, we haven't gotten to the pig suits yet.
Awesome. I want to follow up on something Kevin said, though, because I'm just curious, and maybe this is a rhetorical question. I don't want to put you on the spot personally, Dave, but what is it about the FX in a movie like Children of the Corn that draws scorn and derision, scorn the corn, and it's bad. But the very same
it's
quality.
It's not the same. It's less quality.
It's less quality.
It's less quality. Okay. That's what it is.
Okay, so it's more owning of its low quality.
Yeah, you could have like someone who records a terrible sounding music, and then you can have lo-fi music that just sounds so great because it sounds bad. It's even worse than that.
Gotcha.
You're losing credibility the longer
I know what he's saying, because sometimes you watch something and it's like, this is bad, but not bad enough. You know, right, like if it was worse, it would be better.
I mean, I guess they come right out the gate with this. You know, Children of the Corn is sort of supposed to be like a climactic scene. So
right.
I don't want to justify
it. It's a combination of everything that happens over the course of the movie. That, like, it just surprises me that there's so much action and there's so much effects. And I just picture them putting together all this stuff because it does look very homemade.
Yeah,
and that's the charm.
Yeah. Oh, another favorite scene. I'm remembering more and more great scenes. So we've talked about the pig. The pig transformation is amazing. The snake transformation is amazing. But right up at the top of the scenes is puking up mouse guacamole.
Yes. Yeah. Pico de Mouso.
Yes. Tableside. Tableside mouse guac. Live mice. She's puking up guacamole and live mice. Pretty gross. Great.
The pig suits is pretty fucking... I actually was disappointed when they did the pig transformation. So Kathy meets the queen of black magic, I guess, for lack of a better term, the Liak or whatever.
The Liak.
And one of the first times they party together, they turn into pigs.
Yeah.
I was pissed when they showed actual pigs.
They cut to a
they
regular
cut to
pig.
Regular pigs.
That
and then they
is
go back.
Some cheap shit.
Oh,
just give me the pig suit. That shit is like terrifying.
It was. Yeah.
That is terrifying. That's like more... That's scarier than like some Texas Chainsaw Massacre shit.
Yeah. And then there's the snake transformation, which is very
bad.
Somebody in a sleeping bag that's been
very phallic.
Been painted like a snake.
You answered your own question. That's why it's great.
Right.
And that's why it's better than Children of Corn.
The detached head thing really caught me off guard. And that was it. This movie could do no wrong at that point. Especially when they bring in the other wizard guy or like
the
mystic
the
that knows that this is really dark magic and you shouldn't be messing with it. It's tricking you. But by the way, I can fight it. Here, just I can hold my pencil and I'll go fight this witch. At some point, he finds the body and he's putting like toothpicks in the head and the neck.
Yeah.
So the head can't get back to the body. I'm like,
oh,
this is
that's
fucking,
what that was.
This
okay.
is awesome. This is fucking
right,
awesome. Because I was like, dude, you're just helping it. Like, what are you doing? That's going to stabilize the head. But I guess they were like magic toothpicks or something.
It's like a school project.
It was like those spikes you put up for birds when the birds, you don't want the birds to land there.
So when you were talking about this being like a good party movie, on mute, it's good as well in the studio. But when I had the volume on earlier today, it got lots of comments.
Yeah. They're like, can I sample this?
But it really is like a collection of scenes that's not really tied together that much. She's just kind of going to visit this lady and things escalate from there. But it's good to just have on like every time you walk by the television when this is on in the studio, it's like, what is that?
I thought there was like a deeper statement here. Like at how ridiculous it was that this, because Kathy is a Western woman. I thought it was completely like ridiculous that she just shows up, like anyone can just show up and be like, I want to find your most powerful, black magic queen and immediately learn this. Like,
well,
I thought that there was like a deeper social commentary on how the West thinks they can just come over and like master anything from the East,
I think that's.
I did not find that in any of my research, so I'm going to take credit for that.
Yeah, no, I think that's in there, and I think the reason it was so easy is because the Liak wanted to possess her to do her bidding to kill three people or drink enough baby's blood that she could become immortal.
And that's like the social subtext of
right.
like you think you can come over here, you think you can just do this, but you're also an idiot.
Yeah.
You don't understand.
Yeah.
This part of the world we've been here for a lot longer. And also, did you read that the actress that played Kathy was not an actress?
No, she was just on vacation.
Just on vacation,
she's
and
German.
Like the film producer was like, "Hey, you look like the part. You want to be in a movie?"
Yes, and she extended her stay and shot the movie.
Makes perfect sense. That's why I think it was done in one day. They like opened her suitcase at the airport and were like, "Yeah, you've got the outfits. You got like 3 hours."
When you know that she's pretty good for having never acted before in her life.
Yeah, okay.
It's hard to tell with a dub.
That's true. You don't actually get to hear her voice. One of my questions was, when they first bring the blood to the Liak, she demands blood. And at this point, she's just a very long tongue. She's like a 15-foot tongue that just sticks out
huge
of the bushes.
Huge roll-up.
And she demands that they bring her blood. And they bring her like 7 or 8 bottles of blood. It never tells you where they got the blood from. And she's saying, oh, this is good blood. It's good blood.
No, that's a good point.
Where did they get the blood?
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Plot hole.
Because she seems to need baby's blood later. It's like she needs baby's blood. So I don't think it could have just been random. I mean, where do you even get random blood? I don't know.
But isn't she getting younger or something the whole time?
Yes, the more blood she drank and the more
younger
kills.
She looks.
Yes.
This transformation.
But then the other woman that's like spying on them the whole time, that is Mahandra's ex.
That's the ex, yeah.
That's never explained until
never
she just
explained.
Shows up for
she
like 10 seconds and gets it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I thought the whole ending was pretty abrupt. There's the big battle, there's an epic battle, and then it's, I thought the ending was pretty, well, okay.
Both epic dead. Battle with like some Toho, like Godzilla vibes.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely, yeah.
There's a bunch of Godzilla knockoffs on Shudder right now called Gorgo. You guys know about Gorgo?
No.
Pretty interesting. It's less quality than the 60s Godzilla stuff, which is pretty low.
Okay, next up on Dave's World Week from 1982, Next of Kin.
Following the recent death of her mother, Linda returns to take over her sprawling family residence, which is now being run as a rest home for the elderly. Reading her mother's diary opens up a mystery that is made worse when the residents start dying. Linda has an uneasy feeling that something is not right with the house and that she may be being watched.
Next of Kin is one of those Tubi continuous play nightmares that I like wake up to.
So what a way to live.
Those are scary.
Right, I know. I fall asleep in the couch and I'll watch something else and then things will just play and I'll wake up and I'll be like, what the hell is this? I hadn't seen the movie the whole way through after that first thing, but I remembered these images and the cinematography that was just like very insane and a lot of movement with a camera that you don't normally see, and that used to horrific effect, especially the ending goes kind of crazy. And so I had read a bunch about this movie after seeing that little blurb of it. I was psyched. I watched it, and I liked seeing what young John Jarrett as a good guy. Although, this is one of those movies where it's kind of a whodunit. It's kind of like a soap opera kind of thing happening or like a mystery thing happening. I did get a little bothered by some of the voiceover stuff. And I thought it was really strange when people would just have reverb on their voice randomly. Like that outdoor scene with those two, with Linda and John Jarrett's character, and he just is over there and he has reverb. You know what I'm talking about?
I didn't know.
Is this a wrong version that I watched? But yeah, like both movies, like there's parts where there's extremely different quality visuals and audio. Yeah, I love this movie. What did you guys think?
I made the mistake of watching Mystics in Bali first.
Why was that a mistake?
Because that's such a fucking bonkers ride that keeps your attention the entire time. And then I couldn't watch them back to back, but I was still kind of riding high from Mystics in Bali.
You guys have the opposite experience.
And this is a major, this is not my critique of the major letdown in terms of like pace and like bonkers shit until you get to like the last like 15 minutes. So I struggled. I only got like a halfway through it or something. And I was like, oh my God, I don't have time to fit. So I only finished this movie. Well, I watched the whole thing today. And I'm glad. This movie's fucking unbelievable.
It's a two-timer. You gotta watch. Yeah, it's a two-timer.
It's unbelievable. So yeah, so I watched it all today, and then I did go back like 20-ish minutes or so to be like, let me see if I have this correct, because there's so many characters. Mm. And like Dave said, it's a really well-done movie in terms of who's who, who's doing what. It really does keep you guessing. This is a very effective like mystery movie. This gave me like a lot of what you read will say The Shining,
yep,
which is true in terms of like kind of setting. For me, I'm a sucker for retirement homes, old folks homes, things like that. I think that shit is just inherently terrifying and a little bit morbid. I read that it's one of the earliest uses of like the Steadicam, even before the Steadicam was a Steadicam. They like rigged something up,
it
which
makes
sense after watching some of the cinematography you were talking about.
Yeah.
Soundtrack's bonkers. Payoff is massive. You guys always like, you guys I'm pointing at Trent and Dave. You guys will sometimes criticize like voiceovers and stuff like that. So that's wormed its way into my head. I love the like the voiceovers, the diary reading. So like Linda, who takes home after her mom dies, she's reading her mom's diaries and stuff. I really dug that. I thought it was a clever exposition piece or tool.
Yeah.
But overall, like this is, I am shocked that this isn't more well known, because it, you know, the Shining aside, like it, for some reason, brought me back to movies like The Others. If you guys remember that, like Nicole Kidman,
definitely.
The Orphanage that we've talked about. Like, I don't know. I just got like really, really creeped out by this movie after having an appropriate come down period of time, readjusting, recalibrating my movie watching brain and being like, okay, I got to go into Next of Kin with a whole different vibe here. It's a great one.
So at first I was like, wow, Dave picked a movie with Patrick Swayze, Liam Neeson, and Bill Paxton. This week is going to rule.
That's so funny. That's why I texted you.
Trent texted me. I was like, hey, just a heads up. This week is the 1982. And I was like, man, this week just got a little bit more lame. I was so excited.
I knew you were going to see Swayze and go right for it. Next of Kin, 80s. Here it is.
But how funny would it have been if I would have come in guns a-blazing, ready to talk about
We would have got like 10
movie.
More minutes out of this episode.
You could just give that review. It's okay if you want to.
I didn't get to it. I didn't watch it. Unfortunately, Trent saved me the embarrassment. I thought this one was an interesting slow burn. A slow, slow, slow burn.
It is, yeah.
But the last 20 minutes, it got pretty cool, I will say. And then it got really slow again. And then a car comes through a building and there's explosions and stuff. So kind of like a Patrick Swayze movie, I guess. I think maybe it's worth a rewatch for me, because I just thought this movie was very boring. The cinematography, beautiful. The shots, like... this woo, like I thought it was aesthetically a beautiful film. I understood the kind of vibe that they were trying to go for, but I was in a weird in between zone between Trent and Kevin, in which I started Mystics in Bali. Nick came in and was like, "What the fuck is this?" And I had to stop it. And then I watched Next of Kin in its entirety. And then I finished Mystics in Bali. So I was just in a weird zone this week of a lot of things going on and then like not really a lot going on. The acting was good. What's his name? Jim Jarrett?
John Jarrett. From Wolf Creek. We all know John Jarrett from the Wolf Creek movies. He's the villain.
Which is great. Let's watch that one again.
What's
that
his name?
Mick really
Taylor?
Good.
McTaylor.
It had a pretty cool eyeball stab, but then we didn't even get to see the eyeball, really.
Great stab.
We didn't get to see the, I thought, when I, because I did some research, and I heard there was a cool eyeball stab, so I was all for it, but then you just, like, see the aftermath, and she's like, oh, my eye, and I'm like, what, we didn't get to see the
fucking
ball?
Gorehound over here.
I know, well, in times like this, when there's nothing
she's
else going
anything.
On in the movie, I would expect... a little bit of gore, a little bit of blood, instead of just like, oh, look, he was drowned. There he is. Okay, great. Thanks. Cool. This one left something to be desired, and what I desired was a well-paced and interesting movie.
Oh, snap.
Drop the mic. I'm out of here.
I love this movie. I had never heard of this, or I had heard of it, but I had never seen it. This is a diamond in the rough. This is a hidden gem. It has been lost for a long time, and it was re-released by Second Sight, I want to say 2019, not that long ago. The reason it's back on streaming, and, you know, we talk about none of us really, I guess Kevin is more of a physical media, but none of us are really active physical media consumers. But one of the things is that when something does get released on physical media, it will end up on streaming. That's how we saw August Underground and lots of other movies, that when those packages come out, they often then migrate to streaming. And that's why now this movie is all over the place. I believe it's because of the Second Sight re-release. It had been largely lost before that, in my understanding. But I totally get the criticisms of this movie. And the first time I watched it, I was thinking, okay, 1982, Australia Dave pick. This is going to be a wacky slasher. Wacky Dave pick coming. You know, I was really kind of excited.
No one melted.
Yeah, yeah. And then I watched it, and I kept waiting for it to turn into a Wacky Dave pick, and it didn't. And it didn't some more. And I was very underwhelmed the first time. Almost, I was so underwhelmed that I was like, I'm missing something about this movie. I didn't get it. So I watched it again the second time. I fucking loved this movie. And I think there's a couple things. First of all, I would say do not watch this on Tubi. Spend $3 and watch this movie because this is a mood piece. This is a very, very heavy mood piece. And the thing is, you can't appreciate this movie when you keep getting interrupted with these bizarre ads for whatever medications. I don't even know what the hell they are. Anti-smoking ads and all these things keep popping up in the middle of this really thoughtfully crafted, careful, slow burn. It is a slow burn mood piece. You can't have all these ads in there. Also, the captions on Tubi are so far ahead of the dialogue. It was so confusing. I like the captions, and that also made it very hard to follow when the captions are so far off. So the second time I went and I rented it and watched it the way it's supposed to be watched, and that's when I fell in love with the slow pace. That's when I started getting The Shining. I started getting Suspiria. Even like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the film grain.
Session 9.
But some of those 70s movies, it's 82, but to me it looks like a 70s film. It has that gritty, realistic, scary grain. I thought the lead actress who does such an incredible job, not only did she, Jackie Kieran, not only did she remind me of Shelley Duvall in The Shining, of course, with all these close-ups of her face, and she's wide-eyed, she's very emotive. But those scenes also reminded me of Texas Chainsaw. Also reminded me a lot of the Giallo stuff. I thought this kind of turned into a slasher giallo. If you can stick with it long enough, it's a slow, quiet, haunted house movie for most of it, and then it does kind of go off the rails and it becomes very much a giallo whodunit by the end. This could be Argento or whatever, but yeah, I thought this was great. I thought there were a ton of influences. And one of the things that surprised me about it was it's basically a Victorian Gothic.
It's a total Gothic tale.
And I would, I'm dumb, so I never would think of, Victorian Gothic legacy in Australia. I think of Mad Max and Wolf Creek and
Razorback.
I don't think of Victorian Gothic when I think Australia, but there is a goddamn province called Victoria settled by the English. So yeah, they do have that legacy, and that's a lot of this movie. So it turned out to be nothing that I was expecting, but what it actually is, once I got what I was expecting out of my mind and really took it in, I love this one. I think it's a classic.
I like how it was someone's idea to make the old people scary by just putting like Vaseline under their eyes. You know what I mean? Like some of the scariest parts are them just like with a wet face, like staring up. You know what I mean? Like,
it does get a little bit slashery too, I guess.
It does.
Because at the end there is sort of like that very 80s, we've talked about it a bunch, like the body discovery.
Yeah.
They start clearing suspects off the table real quick.
Well, that's right. That's right, because I started thinking at one point this was going to turn into a Hail Satan movie where she walks into a room and everybody in the whole place is going Hail Satan because it misdirects you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Hot fuzz. But,
The innkeepers, this reminded me of a little bit too.
Yes.
But Session 9 is actually a great call, like the voiceover, the diary reading, like all that stuff. But I was a little bit surprised at the end when people started dropping like flies and like it starts to pull the focus in.
And then it does go
like action movie for a little bit. And I'm like, whoa. But yeah, great acting in the soundtrack. Holy shit. Tangerine Dream guy.
Oh, yes. Klaus Schulze. Yes.
He did the music for Angst,
yes.
Manhunter, the new Dune. So this dude's still out there killing it. Not a founding member, I don't believe, of Tangerine Dream, but I was really interested in the music that was happening in this movie when I was watching it. Like, couldn't wait to like look up who did it.
Yeah, I thought the score almost got goblinish. The goblin who did score for lots of the Argento movies kind of reminded me of that type of feel.
I'm dumb because I never put the giallo thing together. So
yeah,
whenever a movie's slow, I'm like, oh, this is like giallo.
that's not what I know.
Why? Who killed them? And then like they do a bunch of character development, And then I'm just, oh, it's like Jallo. No, but this does have a payoff. And I think you're right about, like, I didn't think of the pacing. And the two movies next to each other are a terrible match together.
It was a jarring. It is a jarring match. You know, sometimes I feel like we talk about two movies that are almost too similar, and we get confused about what the hell we're even talking about. This week, maybe I was kind of wishing they were a little more similar. This was also different from a lot of the Australian horror, because so much of the Australian horror that we watch could only be in Australia. The killer boars and the outback psycho killers and the crocodiles, the rogue and all that kind of stuff. This could be anywhere. It doesn't really, aside from that first opening shot where you get the sweeping vista, which is, I feel like it's kind of a easy home run. If you're making a movie in Australia, you just show the horizon. It looks fucking awesome. But other than that one scene, this could be anywhere. It doesn't rely on, you know, that outback stuff.
Yeah. What is it? Peter Straub, Ghost Story. There's a book called Ghost Story.
Yeah, and that's Peter Straub.
Straub.
Yeah.
Unbelievable book. It's been adapted, I think, a few times to film.
Yeah.
This reminded me of that.
Yeah.
It made me want to go back and read that book because it's such an unbelievable book. And I'm not sure if the adaptations hold up. It's been a long time. But yeah, this really could have been, because I think Ghost Story is like East Coast, like small U.S. East Coast town. Like, to your point, this movie really could take place anywhere.
The cinematography is so good. I think that's the shining stuff.
It does that thing, that the Jaws thing. It does it, like, it overdoes it.
When it,
you know,
pulls
the
focus down the
hallways.
Hall?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. And then, you know, toward the end when Linda's running through the house and running out of the house, when it does that overhead shot of her running down the hall, like, they must have cut a long track in the ceiling or the next floor, the spiral staircase. So, I mean, spiral staircases are scary to begin with. This is an old wooden spiral staircase. All the shots that that show from above, when she's running through that field, it's like a little bit after dark, and there's a wide shot of her just running across the field. All that stuff looks so good.
I like that you're not clear for a lot of the movie what the menace is, or like what the...
Yeah.
You don't know if it's just because she's there and it's strange to her. And she's also, like, batting eyelashes with every fella in town, sitting up on the desk. And she's so friendly with everyone that you kind of don't suspect everyone.
Yeah. This is directed and co-written by Tony Williams, who has, since this has pretty much, from what I can tell, he's just made a bunch of documentaries.
Yeah.
As recently as 2018, he made a documentary called The Passion of Music. He hasn't done anything remotely like this since, but he's still fairly active, I guess.
I went down like the IMDb rabbit hole of,
it's
like
all
the cast and crew, and it's all everybody that worked on this other than John Jarrett and Schultz for the music. Very limited filmography or anything. But I would bet $1 million right now that if you talked to some very contemporary directors like Ari Aster, I think Tarantino.
This is one of Quentin Tarantino's. He says this is one of his favorite.
Yeah.
But I bet if you talk to some of these directors, I bet this movie is one of those that they almost wish hadn't come back into like the mainstream, because I feel like that this is like a big influence on a lot of our contemporary directors.
Both movies, really. I mean, a lot of the stuff that was
let's
done.
Let's go easy. Yeah, Mystics and Bali, huge influence on General Hospital.
It influenced, but it did some things first. It did some things first, is all I'm saying. You know what I mean? Whether it was influential or not, I think both these movies are wildly original.
That sugar cube scene.
Is stacking.
It's so cool. And the first time, it was like what you said, Kat. You said that. Finally, with about 20 minutes left, it picks up the pace, and then it slows way down again. I was thinking the same thing the first time. I was like, wait a minute. Why are we now just sitting in a cafe silently stacking sugar cubes for what seems like a long time? What the fuck is this movie? And the kid is there by himself. And
yeah, where's
bang,
his dad?
The truck comes through.
Was he dead?
And then the shotgun stuff I thought was awesome. You get a pretty nice point-blank shotgun. The head just disappears. I wish there was a little more guts to it, but the head just disappears.
Gory and Kat, you guys looking for some slaughtering?
I think some of these movies, too, there was, starting in the early 70s, there was some sort of tax incentive in Australia to be making movies, and also they didn't have the R rating until the early 70s. So the R rating was introduced along with these tax incentives, and I think that's part of what started all these genre exploitation movies, kind of kick-started the industry there.
I like finding about the other countries that came late into the horror game.
Yeah.
And just see how they come out the gate. And yeah. Some of these guys came out of the gate crazy. Like, their take on what horror is really interesting to see.
I loved the character of Lance, the old man. He's one of the residents, one of the senior residents. He's so funny, and it's really good the way they portray him. He's always telling some story about the war or whatever, bumbling around. I love this, the sequences between the clotheslines outside. Sheets hanging on the clothesline are great in horror movies. When you have people that are in, they're in all the sheets, you don't know what's coming up behind you, and then you can kind of film them against the sheet. You have the dialogue scene with the two people in front of sheets. It opens up a lot of possibilities, and then you never know who's on the other side of the sheet. That kind of reminded me even of like Friday the 13th does stuff like that.
I think there's a Meyer, like a Halloween scene.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
The first,
Michael,
yeah, Halloween.
Myers.
Yes, has that. Yeah.
The, I guess the actor that played Lance, I guess, improv'd, was ad-libbing like all those war,
that makes
all
sense.
That war dialogue and stuff like that, and they left it in.
It's good.
Yeah, it's very good. And John Jarrett, I always thought it was interesting. I never knew who John Jarrett was until Wolf Creek. Sure, a lot of people didn't, but he was hesitant to take that role because he didn't want to be seen as a bad guy, and he was hesitant to then reprise it in Wolf Creek 2 and then in the TV series they did and stuff. And it's funny because you go back in a lot of his early roles, he's like this like handsome, like Australian, like rough, like outback handsome good guy.
Yeah, and in Picnic at Hanging Rock, he plays a good guy. He's even younger, much younger than this even, because it's 5, 6, 7 years earlier. But yeah, same thing. He's not a bad guy.
That must be a tough transition. I knew you used to be pretty, but people think you're scary now. Yeah. And we want you to be scary.
Yeah, it's like when they're like, okay, now you're 30. You're going to play moms now.
I don't know if I've ever seen... I'm not 100% sure I've seen Wolf Creek 2.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. They're all super good.
Maybe I have. Is there more than two? Is there a third one?
There's a TV series.
The series does not falter at all.
Is Jarrett in the TV series?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
What
he's
year did
Mick.
That come out?
Okay, he's Mick.
For two or three seasons.
Shudder.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what year, but yeah, it's...
Probably 10 years ago. I feel like it was early on in me and Caitlin's relationship, we binge-watched
it,
that.
It might have been... Man, 10 years ago was only 2014, Kevin.
Yeah, true.
Isn't that crazy?
I know, it's scary. Wolf Creek 2 is a good one. Like, I may drop that one in because I never think of it, too. It's a really good sequel. It's different from Wolf Creek. More high-octane, but it's a very well-done sequel.
Yeah, I got to check that out. Next week. I don't even know who... I don't know who it is. Is it Kevin?
It's Kevin's week.
Kevin's pointing at Kat. Kat's pointing
Kat's
at Kevin.
Week.
No, it's not.
Well, before this was Dave's week. Before this was my week. Before what was before my mommy issues week.
Did I fuck up?
Me.
Yeah.
And you come in here smacking us around for doing a stop gag episode. You don't even know what
we've
fucking
gave
week.
An extra
you don't
week.
Even know when your fucking week is.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Next week, we're checking out the 1996 Peter Jackson-directed film The Frighteners. Also going to be talking about a movie from 2001 called The Others.